Parsha B'Shalach begins in a state of high tension. Bnei Yisrael have left, but their experiences with Mitzrayim are not over. And, of course, there's so much to discuss in the beginning of the Parsha. I would like to draw our attention to a number of certain questions. And what's fascinating about these questions is they're all based on psukim that are in front of us the whole time. But sometimes by the time we get to the one, we forgot about the other. But if we keep an eye on all of them, if we broaden our vision, we will see that there are a number of very interesting questions to be raised. And let us begin at the beginning. Vayehi b'shalach paro es ha'am. And no sooner, in fact, have we uttered the word vayehi, that we already have a question. I mean, what could be questionable about vayehi? It's a perfectly innocuous word. All it means in as it was, and it was. Except we know from the Medrash and Vayikra Rabbah that vayehi always has a connotation of tsar. Vayehi is a Lashon tsar. Some say that's where the word vay comes from. It's the beginning of vayehi. In contrast, interestingly, the word vehoya is always an expression of simcha. And we've mentioned on a number of occasions the classic observation of Reb David Tevel. Reb David Tevel was one of the two primary disciples of Reb Chaim Volozhin, the Rav in Minsk. And in his drushes, Nachlas David, so Reb David Tevel says, if you wish to understand how it comes to be, that vayehi is an expression of tsar, of difficulty, of anguish, and vahaya is an expression of simcha, consider what those words are. Actually, the word vayehi is really the word yehi with a vav. Now, yehi, grammatically, indicates something in the future. Yehi, it will be. The vav at the beginning is the vav ahipuch, the vav conversive, and actually flips it back to the past. And actually, says Reb David Tevel, what greater characterization is there of a difficult time than one that is ahead of you that you wish you could place already behind you? To take yehi and make it vayehi is an approach to a tsar episode. The converse is true for the word vahaya. Haya is it was, it's in the past. Vehaya, here the vav, puts it in the future. And that's a happy event, something that once it's behind you, you wish if only it could be in front of you again. So vayehi is a lashon of tsar, and of course, we are at a loss to understand why it would be an expression of tsar. I mean, here it seems everybody's happy. Jewish people are happy. Paro is finally rid of them. But somebody's not happy. And it's expressed, and it's a motif word. It was the beginning of the parsha, vayehi b'shalach. That's the atmosphere of b'shalach. Somehow, there's an aspect of anguish. Wherein does that lie? It's also interesting to note that we see that HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not lead Bnei Yisrael direct, as the Pasuk tells us in the beginning, Velo Nacham Elokim Derech Eretz Plishtim, he doesn't lead them to the lands of the Plishtim, Ki Karofu, Ki, again, either because or maybe even though it is the closer, Ki Omar Elokim Pen Yenachem Ha'am Be'osim Elcham V'Shavu Mitzrayim. Maybe they'll get scared when they see war and go back to Mitzrayim. Now, the next pasuk tells us, therefore they took a circuitous route, Vayasev Elokim Esa'am Derech Hamid Bar Yamsuf. Okay. And then the pasuk says, Yudches, Vachamushim Alu Bnei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim. Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim Chamushim. Now, what does the word Chamushim mean? Rashi gives us two pirushim. I think we're more familiar with the second one. which sometimes happens. Chamushim is Miloshen Chomesh, only a fifth came out because of all of those that died in Makas Choshech, those that didn't want to come out, and therefore Chamushim, a fifth of them came out. That's Rashi's second Perush. But actually, his first Perush, which is based on Unkelus, Unkelus translates the word Chamushim as, actually, Unkelus here does not. Rashi says, Ein Chamushim Ela Mizuyonim. Mizuyonim means they were armed. Tachmoshet, to use the more familiar expression. Vatem Tavru Chamushim. So that's interesting. Ah, pardon me, Rashi enlists Unkelus to his cause, even though Unkelus gives a different word, but Rashi means, it means they're ready for action. Mizurozim, they're ready for action. Okay, we have to ask a simple question. What exactly are we to make of the state of the Jewish people as they leave Mitzrayim? On the one hand, they're scared of their own shadow. They'd see a war, they'd run a mile. But the pasuk makes a point of telling us that they came out armed. For what? They're not going to do anything. So why are we told they're armed? The pshat of the chamushim means dressed to kill. But they'll run away. So what to make of all of this? Moreover, as Bnei Yisrael are drawing out Paro, and this, the news reaches Paro, Perek Yudalet Pasuk Hei, Vayugad Lemelech Mitzrayim Ki Varach Ha'am. They doubled back, made like they were lost. Classic bait. And it was told to Paro, to Melech Mitzrayim, Ki Varach Ha'am, that they ran away. Vayafech Levav Paro Vavada Vela'am Leimor. They said, Mazosa sinu kishilachne es Yisrael me'avdeinu. What did we do? We let them go. And of course, the question has to be asked, you really want them back? They've been nothing but trouble for the last year. You pleaded with them to leave. And all of a sudden, you're having second thoughts. Why? Now it is true, but Pashtus, The straightforward answer to that question is, which is fascinating actually, because it sounds like this deep into Yetzias Mitzrayim, the only one who knows that the Jewish people aren't coming back is everyone in the world except for Paro. When they said it was 3 days, and Paro, when he finally had no choice but to let them go, he really thought it was for only 3 days. And in fact, that's the cheshbon that Rashi makes. He sent people with them for 3 days, but then they weren't coming back, and Paro got the shock of his life. He's been tricked. And we've mentioned on a number of occasions, the Orach Chaim HaKadosh says, that's Mida Keneged Mida. It not only was there Mida Keneged Mida for the Mitzrim to be punished for the subjugation of the Jewish people, the Mida Keneged Mida was for them to be fooled into letting them go, because they fooled the Jewish people into working for them. With all the work ethic, Paro came forward, he laid the first brick. Jewish people, Nebuch, always want to be the best citizens, they had no choice, they were there first in line, and everybody disappears, and before you know it, the Jews are slaves. The anguish of having been duped is sometimes more acute than any physical labor could be. And therefore, says the Orach Chaim HaKadosh, that's part of the Mida Keneged Mida. When the penny drops for Paro that they're not coming back, and he realizes that he was taken, that's also part of the onus. And that's the Pashtus. That's the Pashtus, and therefore he feels betrayed. We didn't let them go for good, so we want to get them back. But there are others who have a different approach, which I'd like to consider. Now, as Bnei Yisrael leave Mitzrayim, let's go back to Parshas Bo, to have the Pesukim in front of us to see the issue here. Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Lamed Tes. Perek Yud Beis Pasuk Lamed Tes. Vayofu es habotze kashe utziu mimitzrayim. They baked the dough that they took from Mitzrayim. Ugos matzos kilo chometz. It was matzos, not chometz. Kigorshu mimitzrayim. They were thrown out. Vleachulis mameya. They couldn't wait. V'gam tzeda lo osu lahem. And they made no provisions. That is very interesting. They made no provisions. Did they know that they were going to leave Mitzrayim? They knew. V'hotzeisi, v'itzalti, v'galti, v'lokachti. Everybody knows that tonight is the night. They're told to eat the Korban Pesach, mosnechem chagurim, na'alechem baraglechem, be ready to leave. So they've been told already from the beginning of the month, be ready to leave. And when they left, they were completely unprepared. That's interesting. We know what Seder means. Seder laderech. They left with no food. They left into the wilderness with no food. That's interesting. How could they do that? This is the entire Jewish people. That means that there are thousands upon thousands of Jewish mothers here. And no one prepared any food. And they just left. What will we like in the wilderness? What will we eat? Will there be enough to eat? No one really considered that, apparently. What makes the matter more acute is when we consider a comment of Rashi in this week's Parsha, Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. And this is as the man begins to fall. Perek Tet Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. Vayisumi Elim. So they've gone through, we've past the chase. We'll get back to Kriyas Yamsa, but in the meanwhile, they Vayisumi Elim, they traveled from Elim, Vayavo'u Koladas Bnei Yisrael al Midbar Sin, Asher Ben Elim Mevein Sinai, they came to Midbar Sin, Bachamisha Sayom Lachodesh Hasheini, the 15th of the second month, let's say Samaritan Mitzrayim, that's the 15th of Iyar, that is a month after Yitzias Mitzrayim. And that is when the man began to fall. My second son, his middle name is Moshe. He was born on the 15th of Iyar. So we called him Moshe, partially, after the man fell in the schus of Moshe Rabbeinu on the 15th of Iyar, the Mefurish in the Pasuk. Now that's a month after Yitzias Mitzrayim. Let's see Rashi. Rashi says, "B'chamisha asayom nisparish hayom shel chanoya zo." The Torah made a point of specifying when they encamped here in Midbar Sin, Lefi Shebo Bayom Kol Sahacharara Sheotziu MiMitzrayim, because that was the day that all of the food that they took out of Mitzrayim finished. The Hutzruchu Laman, so they need food. Lamadnu, from this we learn Sheochlu Mishiyari Habotzek O Mishiyari Hamatzah Shishim Va'achas Sudos. They basically had 61 seudos, 61 meals, twice a day, for a month, and then v'yarad le'naman b'tesva v'iyar. So that's interesting. The pasuk told me they came out completely unprepared. And now I know that completely unprepared means only with food for a month. Well, okay, now maybe things make sense. If unprepared means food for a month, so we can afford to be unprepared. But they don't sound like the same thing. Kamtseida lo osu lahem, their dough barely didn't even have time to rise. It doesn't really sound like they made any provisions, but lo and behold, they have enough food for a month. And it doesn't sound like, I'm not sure if Rashi means to say that it sounded like a miracle, because if it's a miracle, so then why do you need a new miracle of the month? And why just not keep the old one of the Shiari Hamatzah until further notice? It really sounded like they had a month's worth of food, which makes a lot of sense, except the pasuk said they made no provisions. These questions and more are raised by someone called Avram Korman, Alav HaShalom. He lived here in Eretz Yisrael. I know two things about him. Number one, he worked as a pakid in Misrad HaPnim. That's the first thing. The second thing is he knew everything. He wrote svarim after svarim after svarim. His questions are always fascinating. His answers are thought-provoking, but sometimes they raise more questions than the questions that he raised, but certainly worth considering in terms of the discussion that's generated. None of the questions so far should escape our notice indefinitely. There is a yisod. It is to be found originally in the Zohar HaKadosh. The Alshich, Rabbi Moshe Alshich HaKadosh, uses it extensively. We know that when the Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim, there was a certain group of people that attached themselves to them, and they are called the Eruv Rav. Now, the Zohar says that you will find, sometimes, the Pasuk refers to Bnei Yisrael as Bnei Yisrael, and sometimes there is a reference to the Am. In the vision, the analysis of the Zohar, the Am does not refer to Bnei Yisrael. The Am refers to the nondescript people who accompanied them. They are the Eruv Rav. Now, they are behind, according to Chazal, they're behind a great deal of the pitfalls of Bnei Yisrael. They'll find a lot of mention of the Am around the Chet HaEgel, and Rashi comes very close to talking about this himself. At the very least, when Hashem says to Moshe, Lech Reid, Ki Shiches Amcha, your Am has gotten the Jewish people into trouble. He calls the Eruv Rav Moshe's Am. Moshe agreed to take them out. Of course, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't, so to speak, disagree at the time. But according to the Zohar, the Am is the Eruv Rav. Now, they're very complicated people. On the one hand, they came out. Now, they're not just opportunists. They came out because they felt a certain affinity with the Jewish people, and they were drawn after them. On the other hand, of course, they're not naturally Jewish, and they have very strong nostalgic connections to Mitzrayim. And therefore, if there's a sign of trouble, they will be the first to reconsider, maybe we made the wrong choice to attach ourselves to the Jewish people. The Am will always be the first to go back to Mitzrayim. Now, what's interesting is, how do we relate to the Eruv Rav? Do we embrace them? Do we hold them at arm's length? So again, I mean, to use maybe an ill-advised expression, but we have a mixed reaction to the Eruv Rav. Because on the one hand, they cause a lot of trouble, but we never let them go. And I have a feeling about this. I think can be sourced back to a Gemara in Maseches Nedarim, in Daf Lamed Beis, where there the Gemara asks, interestingly, a question that doesn't sound like it should be asked. But the Gemara asks, why is it that the Jewish people went through such hardships in Mitzrayim? For us, the answer seems to be simple, but there's much more to it than Bama Eida, Yado Et Eida. Much more happened to the Jewish people than that. And the Gemara, in one of three explanations, attributes it to something fascinating, to a mistake, to use the term advisedly, a mistake that Avraham Avinu made. Where? After the war with Sodom. It's fascinating to consider this point. After the war with Sodom, Melech Sodom said, Ten li hanefesh v'ruchush kachlach. That means that Avram actually had commandeered the entire population of Sodom. They were under his auspices, under his patronage. Melech Sodom, of course, wants them back. Sodom won't be the same without the Sodomim. Ten li hanefesh, he says to Avram, you give me the people back, for v'ruchush kachlach. Now, Avram is famous for refusing the rechush. Im michud v'tzuchnal, I'm not going to take anything. But he did give the people back, interestingly. That's not really spoken about so much. But he did, the Pashtus. And the Gemara says he shouldn't have. In other words, if he could only influence Sodom to do better, and how better influence them than to stop them from going back to Sodom and becoming Sodomim again, maybe he could have saved them. Sherichek osa milachsos tachas kanfei hashchina. We never imagined that Sodom were potential candidates as Avraham Avinu's disciples. But they were. He had them in the palm of his hand. And he gave them back to Melech Sodom. Very interesting. Some say that this is why Avraham Avinu put himself out so much to daven for Sodom. When they hit the threshold of destruction, Avraham Avinu does whatever he can to save them. And this Rebbe Meir Chodosh said, the Mashkiach of first Chevron, then Ateres Yisrael, because he feels that he feels a certain achrayus to them. Maybe he shouldn't have let them go back and become worthy of destruction. He tries, does whatever he can. Against this background, if indeed the Jewish people have to go through Golas Mitzrayim as a result of Avraham Avinu rejecting a group of people who he potentially could have brought closer to Kanfi Hashchina, then I think we well understand why when the Jewish people eventually came out of Mitzrayim and there was a group of people who wanted to attach themselves to them, they didn't say no. How can they say no? You just recovered this second from 400 years of fallout of having sent another group away. Now, when this group themselves wants to come to you, they cause a lot of trouble, but Moshe never lets them go. And all provisions are made to give them as much of a chance as possible. And they are the Am. And now, let us see how the psukim at the beginning of Bishalach reads somewhat differently. Vayihi. There is a certain sar. And the reason why is because, well, before we get to the tsar, who are we talking about in the opening pasuk? Vayihi b'shalach paro es ha'am. See, as paro also released the am. Now, if the am is the Erev Rav, v'lo nacham alokim derech eretz plishtim. So Hashem made the route circuitous, ki korovu, ki amar lekim pen yinachem ha'am. We have to give them a chance. If the first thing they meet is adversity, the Am will go back. Ah, does that mean the Jewish people would go back? No one said a word about the Jewish people yet. The Jewish people themselves were ready to fight, as is explicit in the next pasuk. V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim b'nei Yisrael achamushim. There's so much irony here. Were it only to be B'nai Yisrael that came out, they would have gone direct and Jewish history would have been forever changed. But because Paro also released the Am, and the Am will make a beeline back from Mitzrayim, they need to be given a chance. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu chose a circuitous route. Now that actually, because of looking back, the Jewish people would suffer from that. We already have an aspect of tsar. Vayihi b'shalach paro es ha'am. We couldn't say no. But in the end, to a great degree, they proved more trouble than they were worth. So Yetzias Mitzrayim has an aspect of vay, has an aspect of vayihi that the am came with, but we couldn't say no. Now what's fascinating to consider is, who sent them out? If we go back once again to Parshas Bo, and that will be in Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Lamed. Makas Bechoros has just happened. Vayakom Paro Laila. Paro gets up. Hu v'chol avod v'chol Mitzrayim. They all get up. Vatitzok ha'gedolu b'Mitzrayim ki ein b'yisa she'ein shemes. Pasuk Lamed Aleph. Vayikra l'Moshe u'l'Aaron Laila. He calls to Moshe and Aaron and says, Kumu tzu mitoch ami, gam atem gam b'nei Yisrael. Go. B'nei Yisrael are free. So Paro has released B'nei Yisrael. What about the Eruv Rav? He never spoke about them. He probably would not wish to part from them, to part with them. But they left anyway, because they were thrown out. Well, who threw them out? That's the Pasuk Lamed Gimel. Vatechezak Mitzrayim al ha'am lemaher l'shalchan. That's very interesting. Paro releases B'nai Yisrael. Mitzrayim sends out the Am. And this raises a very interesting question, because the Eruv Rav, those that had a certain affinity for Judaism as it was then, for the Jewish people as they were then, they were known as such. And therefore, whereas Paro, he has only ever agreed to send out Bnei Yisrael, but Mitzrayim, who are panicking, because they say, as the pasuk concludes, Ki Amru Kulanu Mesim, we're all dying. We're all dying means anyone who has any trace of affinity with the Jewish people, leave with them. He is troubled by association. Mitzrayim got rid of the Am. Because anything that even had was Jewish colored was no longer welcome in Mitzrayim. Now, if that's true, so this could lead us to an interesting conclusion. Because, as Pasuk Lamed Ches says, of Perek Yud Beis, Pasuk Lamed Ches, Begam Erev Rav Ala Itam. Okay, this is the first mention of the Erev Rav, Etzon Vakam Mekneka Veid Ma'od. So Pasuk Lamed Ches deals with the Erev Rav. Pasuk Lamed Tes, and this is a delicate point. When they baked matzos, not chametz. Ki goshu mitzrayim, they were thrown out. They weren't given any time to tarry. They made no provisions. But we just saw, did we not? By Avo b'nei Yisrael midbar sin, a month later they're still eating from what they took from Mitzrayim. So Avram Kurman suggests that if the subject of Pasuk Lamed Ches is the subject of Pasuk Lamed Ches, then it's the Erev Rav who were taken by surprise. When they were thrown out, so they may not necessarily have intended to go with B'nai Yisrael at the time. But Mitvatechezak Mitzrayim ala Am lemaher leshalcham, you need to get out. B'nai Yisrael have been preparing for this time for this day for a long time, and they yes made provisions. But the Erev Rav did not. They were taken by surprise. And that would resolve that. Of course, it will bring with it a tremendous chiddush. For the pasuk that we always quote in the Haggadah, that we left in such a hurry, is not us, it's the Erev Rav. But it would answer another question. The Jewish people wouldn't have baked chametz anyway, because it was Pesach. The Erev Rav ended up by force of history, as they joined the Jewish people, circumstances forced them to keep Pesach also. The Jewish people, in any case, and that's the Shaila of the Rishonim. It seems from the Pasuk that they didn't bake chametz because they didn't have time. If they only would have had time, and of course they would have time because it's Yom Tov. It's the Yom Tov of Pesach. You can't bake chametz. But if it's the Erev Rav, who by force of the hurried circumstance were not able to, the Bnei Yisrael never would have baked chametz anyway. It turns out, therefore, there is a further subtext here. For when Paro released Bnei Yisrael, he unwittingly released the Am as well. And the truth is, without putting too fine a point on this, Paro released Bnei Yisrael, Mitzrayim fell upon the Am to get rid of them as well. But when you think about it, and everything is relative, but the type of Egyptian, ultimately, that has an affinity for the Jewish people is probably the type of Egyptian that the Paro would like to keep. I mean, who was it that was attracted to? Who would be attracted to the Jewish people in their suffering? It has to be someone who has some form of noble spirit, relatively. They're the best of the Mitzrayim. And in a panic, they were thrown out by Paro's people. Now, how do you tell that to Paro? How do you tell him that you threw out the baby with the bathwater? How do you tell him that as he got rid of his worst problem, he also got rid of his best assets? Well, the answer is to lie. And that's what happens in Perek Yudalad. Back to the beginning of Bishalot. Perek Yudalad Pasukei. Vayugad the Melech Mitzrayim Kivarach Ha'am. Ah, somebody told Paro a story. The Am ran away. Now, of course, the real story is we threw them out. But that's not the story for now. For now, the Am ran away. What do you think about that? When the Bnei Yisrael left, the Am went with them. What are you going to do? Well, Vayafech Levav Paro Va'avados of Paro and his entourage, their focus now shifted to the Am. Vayefach par levapar vavavad el ha'am. Because they can't afford to lose them. Vayom, where they said, Mazos asinu, what did we do? Kishilachnu es Yisrael me'avdenu. We sent Yisrael. But what did we do when we sent Yisrael? The Am went with them. And therefore, power changes his mind. That's why he changes his mind. He's prepared to lose his worst enemy. He's not prepared to lose his best citizens. And he goes back for them. And what's fascinating is, as everybody goes through the Yam Suf, and they all do, and the Yisrael and the Erev, they all go through, but it's a very different experience, Kriyas Yam Suf, for Yisrael, than it is for the Am. For the Am, this is almost their first Jewish experience. So far, the only thing they know is that they have something, they feel a certain affinity for Jews. The next thing they know, they're Jewish by suspicion and thrown out by their fellow countrymen. So nothing good has happened so far. But then the Yam Suf opens for them. And that's good. Now when they come through the other side, so these psukim that we know so well, they're from Psukah de Zimra, the final psukim of Perek Yudalad, you see it culminates in a shira. But a shira needs a certain state in order to, certainly the Shiras Hayam, based on Ruach HaKodesh. So the question is, did everyone who experienced Kriyas Yam Suf end up saying Shira? It depends what type of experience it was for you. If you're the Jewish people, so you have background here. So Kriyas Yam Suf is the jewel in the crown of Yetzias Mitzrayim. It brings the Jewish people to a height they never before experienced. For the Erev Rav, something much more basic is going on. It is confirming on through their own experience their faith in God, their fear of God, and that is exactly what the Pasuk says. For in the end of the final Pasuk in Perek Yudalad, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, Vayar Yisrael es hayad ha-gdola asher asa Hashem b'mitzrayim. Yisrael, they've been to Eser Makos. They have a basis of Emunah, etc. When they saw this, they focused on the greatness of the event. What about the Erev Rav? They're tagging behind a little bit, conceptually as well. For the Am, this is a much more basic experience. It's a much more bedrock experience. It consolidates their emunah and their fear, but they don't yet have the background to reach the heights of the Jewish people. And therefore, when the Shira was sung, which is in the very next Pasuk, it begins, Oz Yashir Moshe, Ubnei Yisrael. Only Bnei Yisrael have been elevated by Kriyas Yam Suf. The Am have been certainly impacted by it, but not in the elevating way that would lead to a Shira. The Shira is for Moshe, Ubnei Yisrael. So this is actually just a portion, but a significant portion of the analysis of Avram Korman. As I said, the questions are fascinating. His approach is certainly thought-provoking. And if it is only the beginning of the discussion and not the end, that's always a good thing as well. Now, I'd like to take a look at how Kriyas Yam Suf, well, the pivotal pasuk where Moshe is instructed how to bring it about, which is in Perek Yudalet, Pasuk Tet Zayin. So Moshe is told to tell the Bnei Yisrael to go. Daber Bnei Yisrael, v'yisau. And now, v'ata. Pasuk Tetzayin, and you. Haremes matcha. Let's just translate as we read. Haremes matcha, raise up your staff. Unateis yotcha, cast out your hand. Al hayam, over the sea of Ka'eyu, and split it. V'yavo Bnei Yisrael, v'soch hayam, v'yabasha. So if we picture in our minds, what is Moshe doing? So actually, well, what is he doing? It seems that he has been given two instructions. I think if we hadn't looked at the pasuk and we based on our recollection, we would say Moshe held out his staff for the Yam Suf, and it's split. He's told, Haremes matcha, raise up your staff, Unateis yotcha, and cast out your hand. Now the question is, which hand? The hand with the staff in it? That's already been raised. And presumably, when he holds it up, he holds it out. But it's been split into two. Of course, he cannot raise his staff without raising his hand, because he's holding it in his hand. And so as surely as in earlier Makkos we have had neteyes matro, right? Stretch out the mater, subsumed within stretching out the mater, stretching out his hand, the hand that holds the staff. Here it says haremes matro, lift up the mater, which includes lifting up the hand, and then neteyes yodcho. So we are at the simplest of questions. What is actually he being told to do? According to the Sfor, it sounds like he's being told to do two things. And it also sounds like the hand that he's stretching out is not the hand that he's raising. Because the hand of the mater is horeim, and yodcho is netei. Apparently, he's being told to do two things, and according to the Sforno, indeed he is. And the reason why is because Kriyas Yamsuf itself is comprised of two separate components. Number one, there is the splitting of the water. And number two, there is the formatting of the seabed so that the Jewish people will be able to make the way across, that it should dry up. And in fact, both of those things are mentioned in the end of Pasuk Tet Zayin. Uvika'ehu, it's a palindrome of a pasuk, actually, according to this, because Haremes Matcha, says the Sforno, raise up the mater, that's in order to bring down the wind that will dry the seabed. Neteis Yodcha is in order to activate the splitting of the sea. So action one, Haremes Matcha, and action two, Neteis Yodcha, will lead to effect one, Uvika'eu, the splitting of the sea, and then effect two, Vyavo Bnei Yisrael, B'Sochayam B'Yavosha, and they will be able to be on dry land. I mean, those are two component parts of Kriyas Yamsuf. They need two trigger acts, Haromas HaMateh and Netiyas HaYad. So says the Sforno. Very interesting. There is a fascinating perush of this pasuk that is to be found in the commentary of the Rosh to the Torah. The Rosh Rabbeinu Osher, who is much more well known for his halachic contribution, he is the greatest of the Ashkenazi Rishonim, Rabbeinu Osher. But he also has a certain comments on the Torah, collected comments called Hadar Zakenim. And what's very special about this Perush is that he quotes it in the name of his father. He is Rabbeinu Osher ben Yechiel, and rarely do we hear from the father of the Rosh. And here he says, Shamati mipi abamari alav shalom. I heard this following perush from my father. And that is, again, what is our question? Our question is, he's been told to lift up the staff, so then, and then how does that fit in with stretching out his hand? Are they two separate things? Are they two separate hands? Why does he need both? Says the Rosh, the word harem in this pasuk, said my father Rabbeinu Yechiel, does not mean to raise up. It means to remove. The word laharim can be to raise up, to elevate, and the word laharim can be to remove. Harimu michshol miderech ami. Or as Moshe and Aaron are told, vis-a-vis Adas Korach, heiromu mitocha kahal, get away, move away. What does this mean? If that's true, then actually Moshe ultimately will have one action. And Kodesh Baruch Hu's insistence is, it should not involve the mater. That's what's about. Haremes matcha means get rid of the mater. Why? Says the Rosh. Because so far, every makkah, or certainly the overwhelming and impactful portion of the makkahs has been done through the mater. It's called the osos. It's called the osos, as we say in Agodah Shabesach, the uva osos de hamata. Bez mater lokim tikach biotcha, ashata se boas osos. And as we know, this type of thing can lead room for error in ways that we can't appreciate anymore. But people at that time who were aware of how, much more in tune with how spiritual things work, it was much easier for them to understand, or perhaps to conclude, that ultimately the basis of Moshe's power is not Moshe Rabbeinu. It's a magic staff. He never leaves home without it. Everything he does is with it. And in the words of Rabbeinu Yechiel, one could imagine that they got to thinking, you know, if I had one of those, I could also do that. And that is a fundamental disservice to, of course, to the Madrega of Moshe Rabbeinu, which will be key, and ultimately to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because you put it down to an artifact. You put it down to an icon. And therefore, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, in this, the greatest of the Nisim, the Bnei Yisrael need to see, it's not about the matter. Hare mis matra, lose the matter, get rid of it. Unateus Yotra, to stretch out your hand. Everybody has a hand, but you are Moshe Rabbeinu. And what's interesting is, confirmation for that is in Pasuk Kaf Aleph, one could say. For Pasuk Kaf Aleph is the execution of this instruction. And Pasuk Kaf Aleph of Perek Yud Aleph reads, Vayet Moshe es yodo al hayam. Moshe stretched out his hand. There is no reference to the matter, says the Rosh. That's what I'm talking about. He was told to leave the matter aside and only use his hand. And that's Pasuk Kaf Aleph. And this gives us added insight into the end of the Perek, which says, Vayaminu b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. In other words, the emuna in Hashem himself, and as Moshe as Eved Hashem, and not in pieces of hardware that they could pin the miracles on. It's about emuna b'Hashem uv'Moshe avdo. It's a very interesting perush of the Rosh b'Shem his father, Rabbeinu Yechiel. And this parish actually is shared by other Rishonim. Rabbeinu Bachya says, Al Pipshuto. That's what it means. And also the Chizkuni. And indeed, there is a Medrash Rabbah to this effect as well. Now, so far we have spoken Al Derech HaPshat. But once in a while, we remind ourselves that the Torah communicates on many levels, transmits messages in many frequencies, and there is Pshat, and Drash, and Remez. Sod, we rarely venture into. I leave that for my Talmidim in the yeshiva to enlighten me out. But there is a certain statement that is made in the Holy Sfarim that the Shem, the name which affected Kriyas Yamsuf, was the name of Tzadik Aleph, the name of 91. Now, what is the meaning of the name of 91? 91 essentially represents the combination of two names of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which are actually in tension one with the other. Because you have the name of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei, which is the name of Rachamim, that we know, and Hashem Hashem Karachum Achanun, and the name Yud-Kei Vav-Kei has a gematria of 26. The name of Aleph Dalet Nun Yud, Adon, the master, has a connotation of din, of ownership, and ultimately of din. And that has a gematria of 65. The combined gematria of the name of Aleph, Dalet, Nun, Yud, and Yud, Kei, Vav, Kei, that's 65 and 26, is what we refer to when we say the name of Tzadik Aleph. And this impacts on many other areas, but there are Haremez or Sukkah is about that as well. Sukkah, the gematria of Sukkah is the combination of these names. And so it goes. What does it mean? I mean, at least the outermost layer. Kriyas Yamsuf was an intense fusion of Midos of Din and Rachamim, because it was the ultimate Rachamim for the Jewish people, and it was followed instantly by the ultimate Din for the Mitzrayim. And in a sense, that fusion is represented by the name of Tzadik Aleph, the fusion of Din and Rachamim, of Adnos and of Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. Of course, this is quote unquote behind the scenes. And the Pasuk doesn't speak about it, but this is what is behind it, and it's in the Pasuk. In order to find out how it is embedded in the Pasuk, we place ourselves under the care of Rav Shimshon Me'Astropoli. Rav Shimshon Me'Astropoli, one of the early Acharonim, he is known for his interpretations of the psukim, where the most obscure comments ultimately will be traced back to the psukim themselves, and it is a mind-broadening experience. And let us see how it works. Where will we find the name of Tzadik Aleph, that is, the name with which empowered Moshe to to split the Yamsuf, says Reb Shimshon, you'll find it right in front of you. You'll find it in the Pasuk where he's instructed how to split the Yamsuf. The Pshat of the Pasuk gives you the technical specifications, and within the Pasuk you will find out exactly what is powering it. How so? Let us see Pasuk Tet Zayin again. It's very difficult for me to know how to introduce what I'm about to say. All I can do is to guarantee you that this Pasuk will never look the same. Perik Yudalid, Pasuk Tet Zayin. Va'ata, what is he told to do? Harei Mesmatcha, to raise up his staff. Unite Es Yodcha, and to cast out his hand. Al Hayam, over the sea, Uvoka'eyu, and to split it in half. Now, let us go from the beginning. Stage 1. Harei Mesmatcha, raise Matcha. What does it mean, raise Matcha? Well, the pshat is to raise up your staff. Says Reb Shimshon, look at the word Matcha. The three letters of Matcha, Mem, Tes, and Kaf, when we talk about raising them, we mean going to the next higher value of those three letters, as if to say the letter with the next increment of Gematria. For example, to raise Mem, if Mem is Gematria 40, you raise it to the next highest letter is Nun, is 50. To raise the Tes, which is 9, it means to bring it to Yud, which is 10. To raise the Kaf, which is 20, means to bring it to Lamed, which is 30. So by the time you've raised Matcha, you've raised Mem, Tes, and Kaf to Nun, Yud, and Lamed, you have a collective gematria of 90. Nun is 50, Yud is 10, Lamed is 30. So far, so good. What's next? Stage 2, Netei Es Yodcha. Now, Netei could be cast out, or to cast down. Vayet el aderech is to go down. So if harei mesmatcha means to raise matcha, netei es yodcha means to lower yodcha. And if you take the word yodcha, yud dalet and kaf, and you lower yodcha, that means that you go for the value that is lower than each of those letters. What's lower than yud is tes, which is 9. What's lower than dalet is gimel, which is 3. And what's lower than kaf is yud, which is 10. 9, 3, and 10 altogether have a gematria of 22. Adding that to our original 90 gives us so far 112. Where to now? Let's keep going. Al Hayam. You go over the Yam. So, Yam, hey, here he takes as a definite article. If you take the Yam and go over the Yam, so once again, over the Yam, over the Yud is Kaf, over the Mem is Nun. Kaf and Nun is 20 and 50 is 70. Adding that to the original, well, so far we have the 112 plus the 70 is 182. Pardon me? Yod, Al Hayam, right? Yud became Kaf and Mem became Nun. 70 to 112 is 182. What's left? Ubeko Ehu. Split it in half. You split 182 in half, you get 91. And that's the shame that's behind Kriyas Yamsuf. So as I said, this is a classic gem from Reb Shimshon Master Poli, and they all go together. The Sforno and the Rosh Al Derech HaPshat, Reb Shimshon Master Poli Al Derech, I don't know how to describe it, and Eilu Ve'Eilu form the complementary picture. Now, I wanted just to mention finally something which I saw only this morning. It's in a sefer of Rav Zevin called Le'or HaHalacha, and he quotes a Meshech Chochma. So if I knew my Meshech Chochma better, I would have seen it direct. As it is, he has a chapter on Shiras Hayam, and he quotes a Meshech Chochma, and it is out of this world. Perik Tesvav Pasuk Tetzayin, just to take a look at a Pasuk from the Shira. And that's all I think that we'll have time for this evening. Perik Tesvav Pasuk Tetzayin. Tipol aleim emosav afachad. The psukim, of course, are so well known to us. Aim of afachad, fear and dread will fall on them. Bigdol zerachayit muka oven. And now, these two final expressions, ad ya'avor amcha Hashem, ad ya'avor amzukanisa, until your nation Hashem will pass over, will pass through, until the nation that you've acquired will pass through. Adya Avor. Now there's two Adya Avors, and the Gemara talks about this in Maseches Brachos and Daf Dalet, and also in Maseches Sanhedrin, in the beginning of Perek Chelek there, because they refer to the two times the Jewish people came into Eretz Yisrael, what's called Biyah Rishona and Biyah Shnia, first entrance in the days of Yeshua, second entrance in the days of Ezra. And the Gemara discusses, compares and contrasts them, because they were quite different in many respects. Now, there is an important discussion, and it flows throughout the Talmud. We know that the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael needs to be activated by Bnei Yisrael in order for certain halachas to apply. Trumas and Maasros and Shemitah and all of those things. And the Rambam actually talks about this. He says the most amazing thing. For we call this land Eretz Yisrael. And what does Yisrael mean? What is it a reference to? What is it the name of? So I thought, it's the name of the land. So really, Yisrael can refer to two entities. It can refer to the people called Yisrael. It can refer to the land called Yisrael, the land of Israel. And the Rambam says no. The Rambam says there is only one meaning of the word Yisrael, and that is the Jewish people. Eretz Yisrael gets that name because it is the land of the people called Yisrael. And it only achieves the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael when that is activated somehow by the Bnei Yisrael. Now, of course, no sooner had they come in, actually it took a while, it has to be established, but ultimately when the Bnei Yisrael come in at the time of Yeshua, so here they are, here are Bnei Yisrael, and now it's Eretz Yisrael. And the Kedusha has been activated, and there are mitzvahs hatluyos ba'aretz, and it's trumas u'masros and shmitah, etc. What happens when the Jewish people had to leave? When they were thrown into Golis by Nebuchadnezzar for 70 years. What happened to Kedushas Haaretz? If you had a solitary individual, they say there wasn't even one left, but if you had a solitary individual who remained, but the Jewish people aren't there anymore. So what is the state? What is the state of Israel? What is the state of Eretz Yisrael? And the Rambam says, based on a certain position in Chazal, there was no Kedusha. The Kedusha went away. It went away with the Bnei Yisrael. In the parlance of the Talmud, Kedusha Rishona, the original Kedusha, the time of Yeshua, Kidusha L'Shata, it was Kaddish for its time. V'lo Kidusha L'Asid Lava, but the Kedusha was not enduring. It was not permanent. And when they left, it left. But Kedusha Shnia, when they came back in the days of Ezra, Kidusha L'Shata, Ula Asid Lavo, the Kedusha of Eretz Yisrael that was activated when we came back in the time of Ezra, did not leave, and still here. That's the position of the Rambam, and it's of course entrenched, right? Yesodo Eson in the words of Chazal. But the question is why? Manishtana Kedusha Rishona from a Kedusha Shnia. How come the first one was permanent and the second one was temporary? Now the Rambam himself actually offers words of explanation. Rabbi Yosef Karo uncharacteristically says, I don't understand this explanation. And I mean, and there's all literature on what the Rambam means by that explanation. Rav Meir Simcha of Divinsk, of course, is no stranger to the Rambam. He wrote the commentary Or Sameach on the Rambam. But in the Meshech Chachmi, he takes a different track. And he says something, it can resonate on many levels. Sometimes, says the Or Sameach, Meshech Chachma here in Beshalach, the more developed something is, the more drastically it will be impacted by a fall. We would say, lahavdil, we would say, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. The more developed something is, in a sense, the more sensitive it is. And if tragedy should strike, the more fatally it will be impacted. And he proves it from halacha, most interestingly. There is a concept of Kedushas Kahuna, as we know, and also Kedushas Leviya. Of course, now a Levi isn't as Kedush as a Kohen. Now the Talmud tells us in Maseches Bechoros and Daf Mem Zayin, as we know, it's possible for a Koheness, a Bas Kohen, to lose her Kedushas Kohuna. We don't wish to dwell on unpleasant things, but if she has a relationship which is improper and illegal as far as the Torah is concerned, she can lose her Kedushas Kohuna. And if she does, says the Gemara, and this is a fascinating point, she doesn't even retain Kedushas Leviyah. But if a Bas Levi would do the same thing, of course, none of this is proper behavior, but she hasn't lost her Kedushas Leviyah. And what that means is the fallout, because a Koheness begins with so much more, so when something impairs it, she can lose everything. And she can end up with nothing. Whereas someone who had the lower level is not as susceptible, or the fallout from the damage is not as great. It's an interesting thing. Another fascinating example, these are rather abstract. I mean, these are very specific corners of halacha. But the Gemara in the 15th parak of Maseches Shabbos, Daf Kuftes Zayin, discusses whether a Sefer Torah has to be discussed. Whether a Sefer Torah could lose the Kedusha of a Sefer Torah. How did it get its Kedusha? By having Divrei Torah written on it. What if the writing will fade? Does it still have the Kedusha of a Sefer Torah? That's an interesting shaila. And what's most fascinating is, the Gemara says, you know, the margins actually, gilyonot, yeah, the margins which are blank, they also have a certain Kedusha. And amazingly, the Gemara says, we have no doubt that Kedusha will stay. Because their Kedusha was always because they are the support for potentially for a Sefer Torah. They haven't changed. And therefore, even if the writing that they were supporting fades, they will never lose their Kedusha. The question is, what about the parchment underneath the writing? That got its Kedusha from somewhere else, from the writing itself. And it actually was relatively on a higher level. But maybe if the writing is gone, it will go to a much lower level. So we see once again that if we could... To oversimplify, but the higher level of Kedusha is much more susceptible to damage, and if and should damage strike, it could fall much harder than something relatively lower, at least remains constant. That's true in many areas of life, and Meshech Chochma says that that's what's happening here. The difference between Kedusha Rishona and Kedusha Shnia is Kedusha Rishona, when the Bnei Yisrael came in, to use terms very advisedly, they came in with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They came in with the Aron. And the Aron was that which established with Bnei Yisrael, with the Aron established their presence, but that defines their presence. Their presence is the Jewish people together with the Shechina in Eretz Yisrael. It was a very high level. But that's why when the Churban happened, it entirely vanished. The Gemara says something fascinating about the second Beis HaMikdash. Of course, it has to be taken in context. Everything is relative. The Gemara says there was no Shekhinah in the second Beis HaMikdash. That's the Talmud at the end of the first Perek of Maseches Yuma. Five things were missing, were Metumim, Aron, etc., and Shekhinah. Now, of course, it's all relative. You say there was no Shekhinah in the second Beis HaMikdash. Of course, there's Shekhinah when there's 10 people gathered to Davi Mincha. And when two people learn Torah b'chavrusa, so when we say there was no Shekhinah, again, it's a relative statement, but that there was a threshold that was not crossed. Says Rav Meir Simcha, in a sense, that if that's true, then the level of presence that was established by the Jewish people the second time around was lower than the first time around. They came in without the Shekhinah, and they established the Kedusha to a lower degree. But it was able to weather the storm of the Churban for that reason. It was, you could almost say, it was Kedushas Leviyah as opposed to Kedushas Kehuna, and therefore it survived the fall. Says the Meshech Chochma, all of this is alluded to in the Pasuk. Of course, the Shira, it has many, many layers. It's talking about things in the future. And these two expressions are about, as we said, Biyah Rishona and Biyah Shnia, the days of Yeshua and the days of Ezra. And what does it say? Ad Yavor Amcha Hashem, Ad Yavor Amzukanisa. Those are the two arrivals. And what's the difference between them? The first one has God's name in it, and the second one doesn't. Because that's the difference between them. The first, Ad Yavor Amcha Hashem. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is revealed as they go through, and that's why when it crashed, it disappeared. Kitchel Shata Belo Lasid Lava. Biyoshnia, There's no mention of Hashem's name, as the Gemara says, because the Shekhinah wasn't there. Ad Yavor Amzu Konisa. Now, that's a lower level, of course. But what is the effect? Next Pasuk, Tiviyemo. The second time around, Tiviyemo, you'll bring them. Vesita Emo Bahana Chalasacha. They will now be planted. In other words, a seed has been planted. Because the basis of Kedusha, even in the future, was planted the second time around, because that Kedusha didn't go away. You can develop it, but the seed is there. Tiviyemo Vesita Emo Bahana Chalasacha. Machon Leshivtacha Pa'alta Hashem. You have established a base for your presence there. The presence wasn't there, but the base is there. Machon leshivtecha. And of course, what is that? What is the basis for the ultimate presence? Is Mikdash Hashem Konu Niyodecha, the Mikdash that, as we have tradition, Rashi and Tosos quote that the third base of Mikdash, HaKadosh Baruch himself, so to speak, with his own hands will make. That's Mikdash Hashem Konu Niyodecha. And the basis of that Machon leshivtecha came the second time round. The weakness of the Kedusha was its strength. That's why Kedusha Shnia, Kidsha Lashata, Vikidsha lost it. Lovo, and it's fascinating to consider, just to reflect upon. The Kedusha ultimately that will, in Eretz Yisrael, that will be the basis for the third base of Mikdash, is already here. It was brought in the days of Ezra, it was on a lower level, but that's why it never went away, and that is Machon Lashivtecha for Mikdash Hashem Kodun Yodecha that we look forward to B'mehir B'Yameinu.